transport arrangements. But there are members who managed to get transported. I'm told in Akisha Park there was a transport bus for 10 to 7. Onopumakwebu was part of that. I'm not sure if then subsequent to that bus there were other buses. So I assume that some of the members were not here. It is a result of that challenge. But we are going to continue with the meeting. They will join us on the way. Today we are considering four bills. In the form of public hearings. We have received written submissions by stakeholders, 9 to be precise. We have drafted a program as to how we're going to deal with those 9 submissions in consultation with the stakeholders. Some were not available today, and the Office of the Chief Whip has agreed that tomorrow there's not going to be a plenary. They advise that we should then also schedule tomorrow afternoon for the public hearings. But there will also be public hearings again on the 26th. We also, in terms of the NCOP program, unless there will be changes, there is nothing in the afternoon of the 27th. But we will discuss that with the Chief Whip, whether we should schedule public hearings in the afternoon of the 27th. But we will confirm with members and the Department of Labor and other stakeholders if we will schedule public hearings on the 27th in the afternoon. Let me formally open the meeting and welcome honorable members, stakeholders, who are representing the public, and also Department of Labor and the public generally. We're going to start with the introductions. My name is Mandla Khai. I'm the chairperson of the Select Committee on Economic and Business Development. I'll allow honorable members to introduce themselves.
Good morning, my name is Willem Faber and I represent the large Northern Cape province.
Morning, my name is James Mthethwa from KwaZulu-Natal.
Good morning, my name is Masefa Godlaradi Khale from Limpopo province.
Okay, can I hand over to the DDG, Department of Labor?
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, good morning. My name is Virgil Seafield, DDG with LPNI. And whilst I'm on the floor, Chair, the DG has tendered a written apology, but I just want to tender his apologies. He's not in the country right now. Thank you, sir.
Chair Mungo Simkali, Department of Labor.
Good morning.
Good morning, Devon Hotejani, the spokesperson of the Department of Labor. Thanks.
Good morning, I'm Wilbur Funnikek from the CCMA.
Matthew Parks from COSATU, but also on behalf of FIDUSA and ACTU today.
Good morning, my name is Martha Palo Matabuche from the Office of the DG, Department of Labor.
Okay, can we go to the Parliament staff, starting with the Committee Secretary?
morning. I'm Nosipho Wodini Zulu. I'm the committee secretary. Thanks.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Luto Moseshuba. I'm the content advisor for the committee.
Good morning, honorable members and members from the department. My name is Thaba Mulusi. I'm from NCOP, the office of Honorable Dikhale. Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Michael Prince, Legal Services, Parliament.
Good morning. I'm Fatima Ibrahim, also Legal Services at Parliament.
Okay. Good morning. My name is Sabulon Love, Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Good morning. My name is Mary Jane from Independent Media.
Good morning, I'm Marco Schmidt from the German Consulate in Cape Town.
Morning, I'm Justin Letoy from the Presidency.
Good morning, colleagues. My name is Wosi Magwebo from the Eastern Cape. Thank you, sir.
Honorable Makwe, you had your hand up.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just in terms of clarification, Chair, the program that I have showed that we intend to, during this term, still deal with the two bills, which is the National Land Transport Bill and the wage bills. The labor relations bills. Now, I just wanted to clarify, because you gave us the dates now up until the 27th of this month. Does it mean that that involves the national land transport, or are we leaving that for the next term?
No, let me clarify that. We already had a briefing, even though I was not was out of the country. There was a briefing on the national land transport bill. The next stage now, there are two processes that are going to be taking place. That we are going to advertise for public hearings. It's a Section 76 bill, but also we're going to be going to the provinces as permanent delegates to brief provinces. It's a matter, it's one of briefing provinces. It's a matter that I wanted to table, perhaps at the end of the meeting, how we're going to do that. Because remember that we're going for this constituency period in July. But I wanted to request that perhaps with members that we use that this period as well to, because it's one day at maximum, or a few hours to brief the provinces so that they can start the process of their own public hearings, the adverts and all that stuff. So that when we come back for the third term, we then deal with the public hearings as a NCOP, a select committee, and then we process the bill. But now, this week and next week, we're only dealing with the labor laws. I mean, these bills only. Yes. But I'm going to come back at the end of the program this afternoon to talk about how we deal with this national transport bill. This is a suggestion I'm having, but subject to discussion by the committee. Thank you very much. Now, we also, let me indicate that now that the portfolio committees are not meeting this week, there's an opportunity now for the select committee also to be beamed on the 4-8. I just want to now, because you're not used to being beamed, sometimes you misbehave because there are no cameras. So now there are cameras that are focusing on this committee on 4-8.
film. So you must be at your best behavior this morning. Thank you very much. Okay. We, in terms of the program, we have dealt with the introduction and apologies. We're now going to receive a presentation, a joint presentation from COSATU, FEDUSA, and NAPTU. And then we have the opportunity to ask questions on their presentations. I think for today, it's the only stakeholders that is available. As I said, that other than we'll deal with them tomorrow. So we have, as I indicated, we have received the submissions, and we email them to members. But we also send them to the Department of Labor so that they can also make their comments on the submissions. We will now start with the Mr. Matthew Parks to start with the presentation.
Good morning, Chair, and good morning, members and colleagues and comrades. I think, Chair, I'll take much less time than the allocated 90 minutes on the program. I'm sure half an hour is more than enough for myself. But yes, my name is Matthew Parks from COSATU. But today I'm here not just on behalf of COSATU, but also for DUSA and NAKTU, which represents organized labor at NEDLAC. It's a joint submission. We've had joint engagement at NEDLAC with our colleagues in the Department of Labor, government, and business for the past few years. So this is our joint position. Chair, also we'll be covering all four bills, the two minimum wage bills, the LRA, and also the platinum members bill as well, Chair. Chair, in terms of the minimum wage, we know it's been a subject of a political hot potato or political football. We are comfortable with it, and it's been subject to extensive negotiations, engagement, compromises, etc. We think the commitment given there by organized labor, organized business, community and government NEDLAC is clear. It's in the February 2017 agreement. It's also in the November 2017 NEDLAC report. I think, Chair, also to say that COSATU, NAKTU, FEDUSA, we represent about 3 million members, 3 million workers. That's the majority of organized workers across all economic sectors, both those who will benefit from minimum wage and also those who are above it. Chair, I also want to say that the community constituency at NEDLAC has also endorsed the minimum wage. That represents about six community organizations at SANCO, the Cooperative Movement, the Women's National Movement, Disabled People South Africa, and so on. You will see it there. Chair, also there's been a lot of political attacks on the whole process. There's been allegations in the media that this process has been roughshod, it's cut corners, it's been shoved up people's throats, people have been excluded, etc. We would want to say for the record, Chair, that none of that is true. There's been extensive engagement. In fact, since 2014, this minimum wage was there in the ANC election manifesto in 2014. It's been in the Freedom Charter since 1955. COSATU has fought for it since it was formed in 85. Before that, SACTU has been a struggle for many years. But, Chair, specifically, you'll recall that the Portfolio Committee and the National Assembly had extensive public hearings in 2015, if memory serves me right.
Sorry for disturbance, Chairperson, I'm lost. I'm looking for that document. I can't see it in my face. Just assist me. I don't have it.
All right, no, thanks, Chair. So the point, Chair, we want to make, there's been extensive public consultation, extensive engagements with all stakeholders. So the Portfolio Committee in 2015, even before the NEDLAC engagement started, had about two public hearings in every single province across the country, including here at Parliament. Those were mass attended hearings. We had about 3 years of intense, detailed engagements at NEDLAC, where business, labor, community, and government were present. Their chair, we had a panel of experts, academic experts, who did detailed research on what is the appropriate minimum wage level for this economy, something that is not too low that it doesn't benefit workers, but also not too high that it might lead to mass retrenchments in an economy where you have 103 workers unemployed and thousands of retrenchments. Chair, I think you'll also be very aware that even the portfolio committees had extensive engagements. They had about 4 days of public hearings, where even persons who were late in submitting were given space to share their views, including SAFTU. And of course, without being the spokesperson for the Department of Labor on my left, they also had extensive roadshows since November till about January in all provinces, including stakeholders, etc. So what I was deliberately, Chair, to counter this public narrative that somehow this thing has been cooked in the dark by a select few and has not included broader society and broader stakeholders. I think Chair also wants to say, as COSATU and FUDUSA and NACTU, we are firmly supportive of all four bills. We know they'll not be perfect, they'll not be a magic wand to resolve all the issues in the economy, but they're progressive and they are a huge step forward for workers. Chair, look, we know the minimum wage is not a living wage, it's not meant to be that. It's meant to be the floor by which no worker must be paid, with a few select limited options. But I think, Chair, nonetheless, it's an ideal, it's a powerful tool to help address poverty. You know, we have massive levels of poverty, we are the most unequal society in the world for historical reasons. We think it also helped to push up the low wages inherited from the apartheid economy. But you know, Chair, it's not a magic wand. There's many other tools that are needed from industry, from government, etc., to kickstart the economy around skills development, industrialization, the fourth economy, etc., or fourth industrial revolution, rather. But I think, Chair, it's a huge tool and it's going to make a huge impact. Chair, again, the 29 hour, we've been crucified as COSATU and FUDUSA and NACTU. Why did we agree to that? I think maybe, Chair, just a few things. One is that it's going to benefit 6.4 million workers. That's about 47% of the workforce. That's a huge impact. That's much larger than any negotiation by any employer or union ever achieves. Chair, also, those are the most vulnerable workers. So that's your farm and domestics. It's also workers in the retail, hospitality, restaurant, cleaning, fuel sectors, etc. Many of those critics, Chair, who from the unions who say, well, this is a sellout, it's a slave wage, often those very same unions accept settlements below 20 rand an hour. So it's a bit hypocritical. Chair, also, we've been informed by international good practice from the ILO, etc., and I mentioned before about the academic panel and so on. But again, Chair, this is a foot in the door. It's not the end of the road. It's to push us forward. I think, Chair, also to assure the business community that we're not some kind of mad lunatics. We've looked at international best practice from the US, the UK, Germany, Brazil, where we've seen the minimum wage has actually helped grow the economy. It's put money into workers' pockets. It's enabled them to spend more money in the local economy, which has stimulated growth, helped create local jobs, etc. So it's not something that's going to cause an economic collapse, Chair. I think, Chair, also just last in the 20 rand, see, there was sensitivity in the NEDLAC engagements between if you put it too high, what will happen to the most vulnerable sectors, your farm and domestic workers. So that is a bit of a balanced act. And lastly, at that point, we had actually organized labor and said we wanted to see 26 rand. Business had originally proposed about 11 rand. So we felt comfortable this is closer to our original demand and it's a sufficient first step. Chair, again, I think the other issues, I don't really need to go into too much, but we felt this is a huge achievement. It's a very important historic moment in the country's history. Chair, when we come to the portfolio committee process for this bill, we had, as organized labor, raised about 16 points of amendments. We were quite happy that we managed to make about 13 changes with the engagements of the members of the portfolio committee and with the assistance from our colleagues from the Department of Labor and the Ministry of Labor. So we're quite happy with it. Some of those changes here for members' information, it includes the expanded definition of workers. It includes escalating fines for repeat offending employers. So you look at a situation where an employer can just budget for fines for, and not pay the minimum wage, that there have been escalation fees, a repeat offender. We were also pleased with the transparency that those offenders' names would be published. And even those applying for exemptions will also be published in a register. I think we were happy with the offer from the Treasury that when you apply for a government tender, you should also be in compliance with the minimum wage. That is not part of this bill, but it's a good commitment. So we're also pleased with the farm and domestic workers to be fast-tracked within 2 years to 100% minimum wage, depending on the findings of research and so on, but we're confident that we should reach that. Again, Chair, we didn't want to cause mass unemployment to those sectors. Those sectors are most vulnerable, most exploited, and you need to get a bit of a juggling act. So that 2 years is basically for them to catch up to it. Chair, I think we're also pleased with the portfolio committee process that the sectoral determinations was reinserted and is protected, and of course that deals with issues beyond the minimum wage, like your medical, your pension, your leave, other benefits, so maybe for farm workers, the housing, water, electricity, and so on. And then we also supported the amendment to include the Employment Conditions Commission's functions to the Minimum Wage Commission. I think, Chair, if we can leave the honourable members with one message today as organised labour, is that we're happy with the bills that should be implemented now. We've received a lot of flack from our members, why have we not implemented by 1st of May? Members have been waiting for this for years, the NEDLAC agreement was signed last year, February. So really our members felt it's enough now, must implement. Of course, we don't say members must cut corners and risk legal interdicts, but we feel we're ready to implement, Chair. Chair, we are, if I can be so bold to say as organized labor, we're not keen for any further amendments to these bills. We know they're not picture perfect, these are not words of art, Mona Lisa, but we feel that they are sufficient enough. There's no issues that are not captioned that we cannot live without. Our highlights and the issues we are still concerned about, but again, the Chair, those are issues we can address in a future amendment bill, a year down the road, etc., and so on, Chair. Chair, in terms of the actual minimum wage bill itself, there's a few issues we didn't capture. One is around the calculation of wage, specifically to exclude medical aid contributions, retirement fund contributions from that 20 Rand capture. But I think, Chair, that could be dealt with in a code of good practice or an example provided for in regulation around it for employers. You don't want a situation where employers say, well, I've given you 5 Rand for medical, 5 Rand for transport, and therefore your minimum wage is now 10 Rand. But I think, Chair, that can be dealt with a code of good practice. Chair, around the annual review, the criteria for the Commission to process annual review is quite detailed. So it looks at wage inequality, trying to reduce poverty, retaining the value, inflation, the cost of living, so on. We had wanted a more specific commitment to a guaranteed above inflation increase each year. But again, Chair, it's not a life and death issue. We're willing to accept the existing wording there. We can always come back to that in a future amendment bill and so on. So we can live with that, Chairperson. Chair, the function of the Commission, again, it's not a life and death issue. We can come to it in a future bill. For now, we can live with those issues, Chair. Chair, you'll see specifically on all these issues I put proposed future amendments. So, Chair, around the issue of exemptions, again, an issue for future consideration. We were not keen that employer organizations can apply for exemptions on behalf of the members. We know that the provision is that you must have an individual application, but again, Chair, it's something that we can live with for now and it can be looked at in the future. Chair, in terms of the BCEA bill, it addressed one issue, and that is around fines for not complying. We felt in future should be strengthened a bit to look at those who deliberately provide false or incorrect information. There's a specific punishment for them or fine, and also specifically tighten the wording around making sure that the workers receive the wages due to them, and so on. But again, Chair, these are issues we can live with for now, and in a future amendment bill, we can look at tightening the language, etc. Chair, in terms of the LRA bill, we have no proposed amendments, not now, not in future. We're happy with it. That's been a subject to extensive negotiations with NEDLAC. We think, Chair, despite the line presented in the media by some critics, it doesn't really represent a setback for any workers or for unions. We're quite comfortable with it. The reasons why we support it is for about 4 or 5 reasons. One, it extends collective bargaining. So it empowers the Minister of Labour, where parties are sufficiently representative, to extend collective agreements. And you know, Chair, that as a former unionist, it's difficult often nowadays for unions to reach that 51% threshold. So in the mining sector, it's very difficult because a lot of workers
they work at the mine or at Pick and Pay or wherever, but they don't work for that company. They work for labor brokers. So this collective agreement means the minister, if the unions are 40%, the employer represents the majority, she can extend the agreements to cover those outsourced workers. So I think that's a huge achievement for collective agreements. It is very difficult for unions to recruit those workers. There's a temporary workers, unions don't have access to them, the workers are scared to join because they'll be dismissed, and so on. And Chair, we're also pleased that it covers all conditions of service, salaries, pensions, medical, and so on. Chair, this is a huge victory for workers because we've seen a rise of outsourced labor in the country. It's more than 1 million workers nowadays work for labor brokers. Chair, I think one of the intentions of the Native Engagement was about, in fact, this task team was called labor market stability. So the obvious objective is clear. We feel that the provisions for picketing rules will help provide stability and a peaceful atmosphere for picketing. It says where there's an absence of an agreement on picketing rules between the employer and the employees, there'll be a code of good practice from the CCMA. That would be negotiated at NEDLAC with business and labor. And we think, Chair, that will help reduce tensions, especially in the private sector. Often our members in the retail sector are told they can't picket, they're chased away from the property, security companies are used to intimidate them, etc. So I think this will help just to cool the atmosphere and to protect workers' rights. Chair, we're happy with the essential services. There's no major changes there. It's clarification of existing practices. Chair, I think the major attack on the LNA has been around the balloting issue, which unfortunately is done by persons with either malicious intent or simply persons who have never read the LRA from 1995. Balloting has been in the LRA since 1995. Many of the critics today who slam it, in previous incarnations politically, they were the biggest champions of the LRA, saying it's the best labor laws in the world, etc. So, Chair, the LRA says a simple thing. The unions must have a provision in their constitution to ballot members before they go on strike. That's been there since 1995. It's also there for employer organizations before they go on a lockout. As much as we were irritated by the Department of Labor, they've been reminding us for the past 5 years to make sure all unions' constitutions reflect that existing legal requirement, so there's no changes there. Most unions, Chair, have their provision in their constitutions, including some unions like FAU, who are part of SAFTU. It's not a major thing. NUMSA, I believe, also has it, Chair. Chair, even the reference to secret, the change in the bill now is inserting the word secret before balloting. But in fact, in the LRA itself in 95, it does have reference to secret. This is more of a legal clarification. And we're not sure, as labor, what is a non-secret ballot? Ballots by the nature, by practice, dictionary definition across the world and locally. It's a secret ballot. It's a piece of paper, you put it in a box. Your vote is your secret. Chair, I think we must also say the obvious that most unions, they elect their leadership from local to national by secret ballot. Most unions, when they go on strike, they get a mandate from the members by secret ballot. When we elected all of our members here in the elections, it's by secret ballot. And even when members want to unelect presidents these days, you do it by secret ballot. Maybe the committee chairpersons are elected through an open ballot chair. But for us, there's no major train smash around it. I think, Chair, also politically, you know that unions are based upon the principle of worker control and democracy, and we're not sure what is wrong with giving workers the right to say we want to go on strike or we don't want to go on strike. It affects their wages because of the no work, no pay principle, so it's not something we do lightly. And Chair, for us, it's also the more scientific method to gauge our support, because you can go to a stadium and everybody can shout Viva Mpambili, but when you go on strike, you might find a much thinner crowd. So rather than exactly we've got 80% support for a strike or 80% against. Chair, I think also one thing we have done to show that we're not complete sellouts as organized labor, as has been said in the public. In the network engagements, there was a proposal that during the wage negotiations, when an offer is presented, there should be a suspension of the strike, there should be a secondary ballot. Those were defeated, and we felt that was correct because it's very difficult to start and stop strikes and then to start again. Chair, also, despite the criticisms publicly, there is no provision for the employer to monitor or observe balloting in the workplace. The only obligation there is for the employer, he has to provide a venue for unions to conduct balloting, which is where most unions take to have their workplace meetings, is at the work premise. So that actually assists workers to have a guaranteed venue for it. And we're comfortable, Chair, lastly on this thing about the transitional provisions to give unions time to to make changes if necessary, Chair. Chair, other issues we're happy with in LNA. It's an advisory application. Workers' unions, we have no interest in strikes where there's no collective engagement. The point of a strike is to force collective engagement. We're happy for the provision of the CCMA to come in. The CCMA is a friend to workers. It's accessible, it's affordable, etc. We're also comfortable, Chair, the premises upon which the CCMA can provide that advisory arbitration, such as if there's a collapse of collective engagements or a threat to constitutional rights, violence, etc. We're also happy it doesn't suspend or stop strikes. And again, Chair, the workers have the right to reject their proposed settlement from the CCMA. You just have to indicate. You just have to consult members. So we're comfortable with that, Chairperson. Chair, lastly, on the Labour Laws Amendment Bill, I think, Chair, we'd want to say that, again, we support this bill 100%. We're very pleased the bill has come. In fact, we're pleased that, Chair, this is this will be the first private member's bill to be passed specifically by an opposition MP. Chair, I think we're also quite pleased with the bipartisan support from all political parties on it in the Portfolio Committee and the National Assembly. It reflects COSATU's long struggles for paternity leave for our members. We think, Chair, it also gives support to providing support on mothers and raising of children. I think, Chair, we're also glad that it's in line with the constitutional provisions for preventing discrimination against persons because of gender orientation or sexual orientation, and that it applies for same-sex couples as well, Chair. So, Chair, why we support it, basically, that it provides 10 days paid parental leave. In other words, for a father or any parent who's not giving birth to a child to get 10 days paid parental leave when a child is born. I think this progressive is long overdue. In fact, Chair, actually, embarrassingly, we're far behind other African countries which actually are ahead of us on that count, such as Cameroon, Kenya, etc. And we think, Chair, it's a progressive thing. We accept the limitations to it that you can only take it once a year. You must provide the birth certificate. We think those are reasonable. And we're welcoming it, Chair. Chair, we also support these provisions for adoption leave, the 10 weeks paid adoption leave for a child 2 years and younger for one parent, with the other parent getting the 10 days parental leave. I think the only issue there is that it would mean the Department of Justice must improve its capacity to issue adoption certificates timeously. Often people take long to get that. Chair, it also means people must be aware that they must have the legal papers for the adoption, Chair. Chair, look, also why we wanted this thing to come through urgently is that you're aware that the UIF Amendment Act that was passed by Parliament by yourselves, I think in November 2016, that there was a typing mistake in it, which prevented that UIF Act from being implemented. So that's had a huge issue because it's delayed further engagements around to look at other ways to increase access to the UIF, such as for resignations and informal and self-employed workers. But Chair, just quickly to refresh members' memories of why we supported the UIF Amendment Act, Chair, was given that you've got 1 out of 3 workers unemployed. We have retrenchments across the economy. We've got huge levels of poverty and a huge UIF surplus, and they need to stimulate the economy. Chair, we're happy with this UIF that is going to increase the benefits from 8 months to 12 months for unemployment insurance. It's going to cover workers who had reduced working hours, increased maternity leave benefits, and so on. So, Chair, really, this is a long overdue victory for workers. I won't go into all the issues too much, but it's there for members refreshing their memory, if they want. Chair, I think also it's going to significantly expand UIF resources by including the public service as well for the first time. Chair, in conclusion, and this is why I didn't think I would take 90 minutes, I think I just really want to say one simple thing, that as COSATU, FIDUSA, and NACTU, the majority of organized workers, we strongly support all 4 bills. We're happy for them to be implemented as is. We're very worried and we'll be very much against any further delays, even if that means there's no further amendments now. We've listed some of the areas of concern because just for future sake, it can be reflected in the Select Committee report to say when you do an amendment bill after elections or whatever, we can clarify these, tighten these following areas. But I think, Chair, we're very keen that this thing's be implemented now. And we know, Chair, we're really racing against time without rushing members because you have the National Assembly recess now. Yourselves are going to recess in about a week's time. And essentially, we've got about 3 months left in the parliamentary calendar before the elections. So we're keen for this bill to be implemented as quickly as possible. Chair, we're also sensitive that this is not normal legislation where you can pass it on Christmas Eve, for example, because government would need to give notification to industry to change the salary systems, prepare the budgets, etc. Chair, I think also lastly, politically, we want to say, despite all the critics against it, this is going to benefit 47% of workers. So that's 6.4 million workers, the most vulnerable workers. It's going to make extra food on the table for the families. It's going to help stimulate the economy. And I think, Chair, as COSATU and Dr. Felisa, we unashamedly feel these are huge victories. We do want to appreciate the work and the support of the Minister of Labour, the Department of Labour on this, and even the support of business. Even we had to drag them, but they did come to the party. And I think lastly, Chair, we also want to appreciate the support of the now President of the country, who has really been an unashamed champion of the minimum wage for workers. So that's in a nutshell, Chair. I hope it's sufficiently clear for members, and we'll be happy for questions. But yes, basically say, Chair, we want it to be implemented as soon as possible. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Fox. I'm going now to give opportunity to members to ask questions or make comments, and then again allow Mr. Fox to respond to those questions and comments. Can I have hands? Mr. Mapuyo. For now, it seems like we're going to have a short meeting. Yeah. Okay, Mr. McQueen.
Thank you, Chairperson. And thank you, Mr. Parks, Mr. Parks, for your presentation. What I want to do, Chairperson, is just to invite Mr. Parks to, you know, to respond to a few comments, remarks I'll probably make as we look at these bills. And let's start with the National Minimum Wage Bill. Undoubtedly, you know, a minimum wage bill, you know, is a step in the right direction. However, there's been an argument, some argue that perhaps this minimum wage should have been approached differently in that. In a country where there's so much unemployment that is so high, we're sitting at 29%+ of unemployment, 10 million South Africans unemployed, wouldn't we be, perhaps we should be cautious and say, in addressing the question of minimum wage bill, we must also be worried about choking business that cannot afford this minimum wage bill, because it will lead to an increased unemployment when we are sitting with this serious problem of unemployment already in South Africa. I would want to hear your comment on that. That's my first comment, Chair. I'm inviting Mr. Parks to respond to. Now, on the Labour Relations Amendment Bill, I'm struggling with the bowel flu this morning. Labour Relations Amendment Bill. Another argument has been raised. We know that you have indicated that you represent three federations, COSATU, FEDUSA, and what is the other one? NACTU. NACTU, yeah. Now, I haven't heard you talking about SAFTU. I know there's SAFTU in South Africa today, and it's a prominent labor union as well. And let me rephrase. My question is, the argument is that there has not been adequate consultation with all organized unions, and SAFTU felt left out. You know what happened in the NA when they tried to, you know, have a moment to be heard. I'm not going to go to the trauma that ensued and how people perceived it. I would leave it there. So, but the question is, do you think that in the circumstances you convinced that there's been adequate consultation with this matter. There's no reason for this matter to be referred back to NetLink. If someone argues that this matter must be taken back for proper and adequate consultation, I would want to hear your comment on that as well. The third amendment bill, basic conditions of unemployment. Excuse me. You know, the basic conditions of unemployment, you know, it's a pretty fantastic piece of legislation. It's progressive. It takes us forward, undoubtedly. Any reasonable South African should welcome this. And anyone who resists it, no doubt, is, in my humble view, is unreasonable. And I'm still to be convinced if there will be an argument to counter this, what this bill seeks to do. However, and be that as it may, the Department of Labor then will have an obligation to ensure that we don't just process bills here, they enforce those bills, there's compliance. I mean, if there's, what's the use of having a progressive legislation that you cannot enforce? You are as good as walking one step forward, two steps backwards, it's verbal cha-cha-cha, you go nowhere, you're just dancing. So, having said that, I'm saying this because at the backdrop of what I understand to be the challenge in the department itself to enforce this compliance, that is the lack of resources, you know, human resource to ensure that business complies. And I want to hear your comment on that, because that is a worrying factor that one sits with. I know you're not the department, but I'm raising it because I wanna, you represent the interests of labor, and the legislation must better their lives. And the only way to do that, these laws and this must be enforced for them to practically benefit from them. I will invite your comment to that as well. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, Madikha. Then followed by Honorable Faber.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me thank the presenter for the presentation of the bill. How I so wish it was written in my language, so that the presenter was presenting in my language, and as I ask the questions, I also don't struggle in asking the questions. And after that, I was going to take it to my constituency and my village, so that each and every member of the village can know what is happening in this bill. Unfortunately, we have been disadvantaged. But anyhow, I'll try my level best, Chairperson, as I really seek clarity on the issues that I'm going to raise. It is a good piece of legislation. But then now my question is with regard to monitoring, Chairperson. As they talk about the level in their presentation of how people are going to earn like 20 rand per hour, my question is, how are they going to monitor that this really is going to work? I know in other companies people might not get challenges, but when we go down on the farms, where people are working for funeral parlors, in the homes, securities, I believe the presenter do understand what I'm saying. So if ever, maybe, let me give an example that I'm part of those people, and whatever they give me at the end of the month, like they will be giving me 500 rand, as I give an example. Even if they're not complying, there are those people who are afraid of coming out with the truth. So they would suffer getting that amount, even if the employer is not complying. But I know if there can be a serious monitoring, this will also assist them. This refers to also the people who are working at the farms. And believe me, if the monetary can be very, very strong, we won't even have a problem of people who will be picketing on the street. Because when people are angry, they don't focus on the challenge. They go into our roads and bend the roads, and if you pass with your car, they will stone your car, even if you don't have a problem. But, I mean, you're not affecting whatever they are crying for. But if they can be a serious monitoring, I think all of us will get help. With regards to Labor Relations Amendment Bill, normally if people see that they have a problem of hiring those who knows and those who can talk, they will then outsource people from outside the country of South Africa. So I just want to know as to how are we then going to deal with this one? Because one, in most cases, they don't want salary. As long as you can buy them food, clothes, assist them with accommodation and transport, then it's fine with them. Salary to them is in many ways. So this will end up disadvantaging our people in the country. And it is disadvantaging them. So I also want to know as to how are they going to deal with this issue of outsourcing. Fines to cover exemption sheets, proposed future amendments. On that page, they are saying they will ensure workers receive wages due to them, but which they did not receive due to companies cheating the system. This also goes to monitoring. How are you going to monitor that we don't have cheating in our system? Chairperson, thank you very much. I saw him, he was nodding his head, ensuring that at least I'm trying to raise my question clearly, even if it's not in my language. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Matika. Honorable Faber.
Thank you, Chi, and thanks, Mr. Parks, for being here as well. I think we must just start by saying that obviously we don't oppose a minimum wage as such, but I think we should maybe think of a universal, that it should not just be a universal minimum wage, and we should actually perhaps look at sectors, as I'm worried at this moment that we can maybe create barriers, as my colleague was saying here, in certain sectors, if you just start at the national minimum wage. Now, if you look at the Government Gazette, 17 November 2018, and this is government research, it actually goes to show that there will be a potential job loss in sectors from 200,000 to 900,000 jobs. So, Mr. Parks, my question to you is, does this not concern you as unions? Thank you, Chair. I think I'll just stay for that.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me welcome the insights that have been shared by the organized federations and the comrades that has been working there. My first question would be, Comrade Matthew, on the amendments and the discussions that has happened in the Portfolio Committee in the National Assembly. I'm sure you've followed that. Can we get an indication from these three federations whether you are happy with those as well? Because when it comes to us as the NCOP, we have to look at the fuller picture. That's my first point. My second one is, Chair, related to the sector determinations. Now, it could be that, or rather, you have said it, there's a 6.4 million people will benefit from the minimum wage, but you have also indicated that there is a significant proportion of these workers that are not unionized. Have you, as these three federations, engaged in any way with any sector of the unorganized workers as well? My second question. My third one, Chair, is to firstly start by making a statement. The statement is, Chair, that we're dealing with four bills. And what we find very often is that the responses to the four bills are conflated. Now, let me first deal with the National Minimum Wage Bill. I think the sense that we're getting, both from our colleagues within the Portfolio Committee, Department of Labor, but also the responses that we get from these three federations, is that 20 rand is not the ideal amount. But we are saying that we're not going to put a figure to that now. But we agree what the ideal amount is, we won't put a figure to. But we agree that 20 rand will make a big difference to people. Now, my question on that, Comrade Pabst, would be that when you discuss this with the business representatives in that land, did you get a sense that they will adhere to that? We were not part of that. Or are you still a little bit anxious about the actual implementation? That's on the minimum wage law. Chair, my next question will then be on the minimum wage as well, related to the calculation of the wage. You are indicating to us in the presentation under 4.1 the employer contributions and indicating that should not form part of the 20 rand an hour. My question is then again, in terms of you representatives of organized labor, did you find that employers are open to the proposal that you are putting before us? Because they're not here, we have to pose that question to you. Chair, we welcome the idea about the fine and also the provision that is made there for the refund of workers who were underpaid during the process. That is great. But let me then go to the Labor Relations Amendment Bill. The CCMA is here with us, but as legislators, we have a responsibility to ensure that we are pragmatic. And very often we are being questioned whether this would be implemented. Can we get an opinion from these three federations about your experience with the CCMA? Would the CCMA be able to deliver on the picketing rules and other engagements related to these four bills and how it would impact on the rights of workers? Chair, my final response or question would just be on the Labor Laws Amendment Bill. Comrade Parks, am I reading it correctly? That the private members bill that was presented to us, that the federations that you are representing here have absolutely nothing to add to that proposal from the Honourable Dudley. You are happy with it as it stands at the moment. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much. Just for me, I just want to check, because you're referring it's not numbered on the issue of calculation of wages. I just want to check if whether I know at some stage when we receive a presentation from the department on all four bills on the 20th of February this year. They also indicated that there will be regulations to regulate the act once they are passed. Whether you have been consulted on the regulations and also whether the issues that you're raising as part of Section 5, calculation of wages and other related matters, whether they should not rather form part of the regulation rather than amending the bill. I just wanted to check that. But also, I see you in the slide you say implement now. There are workers that are going to catch up, domestic workers and farm workers. Given that if this was implemented in
and upon the 1st of May, then you would be starting calculating the 2 years from the 1st of May. Now that the 1st of May has passed, what impact does it have now on the 2 year catch up by workers in the domestic and also farm? And also the value as well, given that the 20 rand was calculated from the 1st of May. Now it is not implemented in May. Whether the 20 rand has the same value as the amount that would have been implemented on the 20th, I mean, on the 1st of May. Okay, you can answer the question.
Right, no, thanks very much, Chair, and to honourable members. Yeah, a lot of questions. But yeah, I think good questions, Chair, so thanks to them for that. I think, yeah, to the first question, is there a risk to business? What about the issue of unemployment already bleeding jobs across the economy? I think that's why there were such intense negotiations and also why there was this expert panel of academics brought in to make sure we don't just come with a nice, sexy slogan, 12,500 a month, for example, but not being sensitive to the realities of a brutal economy where you have 36% unemployed, if you take the broader definition. And you've seen across sectors thousands of retrenchments. So in the last 2 years, about 72,000 mine workers have been retrenched. We also wanted to be honest with ourselves about the enforcement of practicality. So it would be a fantastic, Chair, if we were to say 12.5 minimum wage. But do we think that a teacher or a nurse making 18,000 a month can afford to pay 12.5 for a domestic worker? So then the situation either is that you lead to mass retrenchment of the most vulnerable and impoverished, or you lead to people simply ignoring the law and rendering it collapsed, you know? So I think that's why there was a lot of intense negotiations between our original 26 rand and our proposal, business is 11 rand. I think we felt that it did capture to the right balance, that it's not too low to make no difference to people. The fact that it'll make a difference for 6.4 million shows the impact, but also that it won't lead to mass retrenchments. And I think, Chair, we were comfortable with the compromises. I mean, no negotiations is compromises. If we were ruling parties, COSATU, Chair, we would just dictate, but you know, there's a nature of negotiations as a union. That's what we do. We felt that it captures the right balance. So, for example, if a business can generally say, I cannot afford to pay the minimum wage, he can apply to the department for an exemption. He will have to obviously provide his financial statements to say, indeed, I can't pay the 20 rand, but I can pay 18 rand. They will then give him a transition phase, et cetera, et cetera. It's not an open-ended thing, but there's space for those who generally cannot afford it. I think, Chair, also the fact that we look specifically at your farm and domestic workers as the most vulnerable workers, the lowest paid, also those who have very little alternative employment opportunities. That's why there's that space for 90% for farm and 75% for domestic workers for the 2 year period. I think, Chair, look, also we did really look at, and there was even a seminar where international experts were brought from overseas to share their experiences from the US, from South America, from Europe, and it's shown that by and large this thing has been successful in many countries. I think, Chair, I saw an article earlier this week that I think in Toronto and Canada they're discussing a $15 minimum wage an hour. So we're very far from that. I think we're reflecting the South African realities. Chair, I think also those who say that the minimum wage is a slave wage, fine. But again, the fact that you've got 47% of workers currently earning below shows you the extent of our inequality crisis. And this, we think, it's a reasonable, it's a rational tool to help address it. Not a magic wand, Chair. I think in terms of the issue of SAFTU, and look, so I'm not, I can speak on behalf of the other three, I can't speak on behalf of SAFTU, but I think what we can say is COSATU, NAFTU, and FEDUSA around the, that's also why I went into quite detail on the consultation processes deliberately, not to board members with details. We feel there have been sufficient consultation processes. So from the National Assembly in 2015, going to all provinces, not just talking to people like myself, but talking to ordinary workers. I think the fact, Chair, that you had 2.5 years of engagements at NEDLAC. So now staff has complained that they've not been part of the NEDLAC engagements. Sure, that's true. But the NEDLAC agreement was signed in February 2017 after 2.5 years of discussion. SAFTA was formed in April 2017. We also couldn't halt a negotiation because someone else might be formed down the road. Chair, it's also not the first time that you don't have all federations not being present. So the current General Secretary of SAFTA was previously General Secretary of COSATU. There was a smaller federation which no longer exists called CONSAU. They applied to join NEDLAC about 10 years ago, if memory serves me right. So NEDLAC parties, they set the threshold for what are the criteria to join, because you can't have somebody just, myself and the chairperson, forming a federation by ourselves in a bar. There must be some criteria. The criteria was based upon membership, how many years have you been in existence, are you registered with the Department of Labor, do you meet their requirements of audited financial statements, verified membership. So COSATU applied to join a couple of years ago. The membership was about 50,000, and the membership threshold for federations was about 300,000. COSATU didn't meet it. They went to court, they lost the court case. In fact, the court dismissed the case with costs. All it said to SAFTA that they must join by simply being existing for 2 years, so you're not a fly-by-night thing. Show us your verified membership figures, which you must submit to the Department of Labor for your own registration requirements. Show us your audited financial statements. You will join. No problems. But we couldn't also delay what workers are crying for because of who might be formed down the road. Tomorrow might be another federation. You know, maybe the DA will form a federation. At one stage, the former president of COSATU, Willie Madisha, also wanted to form a federation. I think he then died after about a month or so. So, yeah. So when they come, it's fantastic, no problems. Chair, look, even on the 20 rand an hour, it's a nice political football. We accept politics, points scored, no problem. But you have members of SAFTA who've accepted below 20 rand an hour wage agreements, including NUMSA. So there's not something that falls out of the sky. We've seen very, very few unions which have achieved the 12.5, especially for those vulnerable sectors, Chair. That's what we felt was a reasonable process. Even Chair, let me also say the Portfolio Committee really went out of its way. They had 4 days of public hearings, even for those parties which submitted late, after the closing date. SAFTA was one of them. They submitted about 2 weeks late to the Portfolio Committee, and we supported the Portfolio Committee. Let them come. Let everybody be included. Inclusive process. We don't want court dramas. But of course, at some stage, you must close it. You can't be consulting forever and ever. Amen. Chair, I think also to make the point, and again, I'm not on a mongi for the Department of Labor, they had roadshows from November, December, January, this year, last year. SAFTA never made one submission there. So again, Chair, yeah, I think even if I'm correct now, Chair, I could be wrong, I don't believe SAFTA made a submission to this NCP process. So again, Chair, it's fine, they say right, no problem, but we must also not delay what workers are waiting for, Chair. I think in terms of the BCA tomorrow, November, I couldn't agree with you more. 100% agree with you. The critical thing is for the Department of Labor to have the capacity to enforce. They've assured us they have it, got it. We think they need more support, Chair. I think the labor inspectors they have of about 1.5, if I'm right, is not enough for the size of the economy. But, you know, even if you give them 10,000, you do need the kind of political buy-in, so to speak, from business industry. We know it won't be an overnight magic wand. But even if 80% of businesses comply out of a good consciousness, that's still 80% achievement for those workers. And gradually we'll change it. We're comfortable, Chair, that about the fines, and specifically the escalating fines for repeat offenders. We know all laws have this challenge. And we know people still jaywalk despite traffic laws. They still do wrong things despite many laws. But we must try, Chair, even if we don't succeed all the time. I think, Chair, we've already received positive feedback from some of our workers, including farm workers, where employers already not just giving them the 18 rand, but even 20 rand. And I think the 20 rand is a nice symbolic figure that's easy to grasp for everybody, that is 20 rand. That is the idea, Chair. I think the Honourable Dehai, Chair, look, let me apologise. I am linguistically backward. I think it's a problem with white people. We're backward. But I think, Chair, I want to agree with Honourable Dehai, and something as we as organised labour, specifically as COSATU, to say, once these things are done, we must have a very simple, easy-to-understand pamphlet. I think we'll talk to the Department of Labour as well for them to do similar in all 11 languages, especially targeting the most vulnerable workers, people in rural areas, farms, informal areas, places that are not even on the map, to be aware of all the positive changes. something we're planning to do around in the mass media, but again, it's something you really need in pamphlets. Hit the train stations, the taxi ranks, hit the rural towns on a Saturday. And we definitely Chair, we'll be failing if we only put that in English, Chair. It needs to be in all African languages. Again, I think, Chair, yeah. We know some of the issues, Chair, would be catered for in the regulations. There is discussions in NEDLAC around the regulations that are almost complete. But yeah, Chair, in terms of their monitoring, it's a task that us as unions have got to pull up our socks, monitor effectively, Department of Labour. We think, Chair, even honourable members, when you do your constituency work, it's also something to raise, to check yourselves. Chair, again, I think we're happy with escalating fines, and we hope it'll be successful in dealing with abuse of exemptions. Chair, I think the Honourable Dekhai is right, that the most difficult challenge will be farm workers, domestic workers, really, because even the Department of Labour for years has struggled to gain access because it's private property, it's a private house. It's something we really need to pull up our socks. And most farm workers, Chair, I don't think it's even 5% of farm workers who belong to unions. It's very, very few. I think Honourable Dekhai also is 100% right around what employers often do, especially in the farming, security, fuel, restaurant sectors. They employ Zimbabweans, other migrant labour, who are not documented because they know that they won't ask about labour rights. If they do, you just dismiss. They can't complain to Home Affairs. There was an amendment about 4 years ago in the LRA. We said even if you're undocumented, you have all the labour rights, so you don't sacrifice those rights. But again, we agree with you, Chair. It's issue of enforcement from the department, from unions, but also issue about business conscientizing their own membership. That as some of these businesses, Chair, not a far-flung farm near Tabazimbi. It's restaurants and waterfront. It's petrol stations in Cape Town. We all know who are the guilty ones. I think we all have a, including Kusatu and Fudus and Akta, we've got a challenge in that regard, Chair. Chair, for Honourable Farber, we know the whole kind of debates, national versus sectoral determinations, etc. I think the difficulty with sectoral determination is that currently only about 30% of the workforce is covered by them. So you have 70% uncovered. And I think the fact that you've got 6.5 million or 47% of workers earning less than 20 rand just shows you this is a massive challenge. But look, the minimum wage is just the floor, it's not the ceiling, it's the floor below which no one should be paid, and specifically those vulnerable workers. The sectoral determinations, Chair, we're happy they remain in place because they are much more specific, much more broad, pension, leave, medical, etc. But I think, Chair, also that we're comfortable that if any business can generally not afford it, he can apply for an exemption, the Department of Labour will have to have the capacity to deal with it. And I think, Chair, we felt it was a livable compromise for the farmer domestics to be phased in over the 2 years, Chair. I think, Chair, to Honourable Makoe around the portfolio committee amendments, are we happy? No, look, Chair, we're happy. We know that negotiations are give and take. You will not get everything you want. Sometimes we wanted to clap the Department of Labour. But, Chair, I think the fact that as Labour we came with 16 proposed amendments in the portfolio committee, we got 13 of them sorted out. The other three can be catered for through regulations. And the other issues we just flagged for our future amendment bill. So we can live with it now. We're ready to implement. Chair, I think politically we took a decision as organised Labour to say, well, you can make further amendments, but there's a cost of delays. The delays also come with a risk of not passing it this year or not getting an increase next year, even risking not passing it next year, versus passing it now and you can manage what you didn't get and you can come with a future amendment bill down the road. Chair, the issue of unorganized workers is always a difficult thing. But look, even though Kusatu, Furusa and Akta are based upon organized workers, we often get unorganized workers coming to us for daily basis for assistance. There has been that engagement. We've had workplace forums and so on. Look, even some of our members are not thrilled with the 20 rand, but we accept it as a livable compromise. It's a step forward. I think, Chair, also to bear in mind that the workforce we have also supports the huge army of unemployed workers. So there's a symbiotic relationship. I think, Chair, also we feel the 20 rand, yes, not ideal, but as a starting point, the Commission will have the powers for annual review with very clear mandates, protecting the value, cost of living, inflation, wage inequality, poverty. Chair, also there is that medium-term target, which will look at a further increase as research indicates the space. And I think, Chair, maybe assist the Honourable Makoe. The NEDLAC agreement was signed by all parties in NEDLAC, including business, that they have accepted it. And that business represents business unity essay, and so on. So we think it's a fair compromise, Chair. I think, Chair, Honourable Makoe, in terms of employee contributions, look, we feel that our issues about the deductions can be, we were a bit comfortable with the linkage to the BCA provisions. And again, we think that in regulations, you could have a code of good practice to specify what calculations should have been included, what can be included, and so on. We don't think there'll be any real opposition from employers around that. The Department of Labor and the CCMA have assured us that they do have the enforcement they're ready to implement. If they're not, I think, Chair, you must hold them before the red carpet immediately afterwards. But they've assured that they are ready to implement. Changes to the picketing rules, I think that's the easy one because there's a commitment to a NEDLAC engagement on a code of good practice for picketing rules. Chair, I think Makoe, for the private members bill, the LLA, no, sure, we're happy with the chair. It's been taken too long, just implemented. Ideally, we would love to see a situation of a Swedish type scenario of 480 days, but no, we're not ready for that economically. That's a long term target. We put it there just for political reasons, but we're happy with it, with the 10 days parental leave, the 10 weeks adoption leave. It's been too long, Chair. That bill has been there for about 3 years already. I think lastly, Chair, to the former Secretary of COSATU in the Eastern Cape, Honorable Chai, I think, Chair, no, again on the calculation of wages, we're happy that it's been linked to the BCA. often our former COSATU members give us the toughest time when we come to Parliament. They hold us to higher standards. And I think, Chair, a lot of the issues can be dealt with through regulations. There is engagement at NEDLAC on the regulations. I think they've just about concluded. They've been advertised for public comment. I think that closing date, if I'm right, is tomorrow for public comment. And that will be finalized soon. We think that wage calculation can be dealt with through a code of good practice, Chair. Yeah, and lastly, I think, Chair, in terms of the farmer domestics, we were comfortable with the compromise of a catch-up. Even there, Chair, it is an increase for them. I think very lastly, Chair, yeah, we're quite worried that we've already had a lot of delays. This thing was meant to start from 1st of May. We agreed with the Portfolio Committee of delaying beyond the 1st of May because we didn't want them to rush things so quickly that it would open them up to a constitutional court challenge. But we felt sufficient space has been given for them to do the job properly, for yourself to do the job properly, for public participation. Our plea to members, Chair, is that if the NCP can be done, say, by mid-August, whatever is the correct time frame for the NCP to do its work properly, that will then enable the President to sign it by the beginning of September, enable it to come into effect across the economy the 1st of October. We raise that, Chair, because knowing the disjointed recess currently right now between the NEDLAC and NCP, but also that you've got September, August, September, October, November, 4 months left in the parliamentary calendar. Not much will happen next year before elections. Chair, I think also we are worried, as you kind of alluded to, that 20 rand was agreed to in February 2017 formally. If this bill only gets done end of the year, the wage comes into effect, let's say February next year, that means the 20 rand would have been there for 2 years. If you deduct inflation, then you're talking about, it's actually worth about 16 rand, less if you talk about the farmer domestics. And also, Chair, we're keen to get it done this year, say by October, so it makes it, workers have a hope of getting an increase next year. So I think that's our plea, Chair. We know it's not a picture-perfect thing. Negotiations are always messy. But overall, Chair, this is a historic change which really, to sum it up, is going to benefit half the workforce or half the nation in effect. So for that alone, Chair, we think it's something worthwhile prioritizing and for all parties to support. Yeah, I think that's it, Chair. Hopefully I answered all the questions.
I'm going to go for the second round. For me, again, the 6.4 that is going to benefit out of the level, do you have perhaps research on how many of those are unionized? Okay. Let me welcome members who have just joined, Honorable Matthew and Honorable Chebe.
and also officials that have joined us from Department of Labor and the Parliament and the members of the public. Can we also give opportunity to those who are not part of the first round, if you have questions, to COSATU? We have second round here that goes for everybody. Other members? Okay, can you respond to my question then?
I've got no powers to instruct members, Chair, on how to... no, Chair, I think on your issue, I can gladly provide you with that detailed research that I've given to NEDLAC. And it breaks down the specific categories, how many retail, how many hospitality, hotel, farm, domestic workers, where they're currently earning. So I can easily share that with members, Chair, through yourself. I think I couldn't give you the exact percentage offhand how many are unionized, but I'll be comfortable to say that the majority are not unionized. Look across the economy, only about 1 out of 4 workers is unionized. And specifically, those most vulnerable sectors tend to be the least unionized. Farm workers, you know, it's the best 5% who are unionized. Domestic workers, historically, it's been a huge challenge for all unions, locally, internationally, to organize domestic workers by their nature. Some sectors are a bit better organized, like your retail sectors. Sakawa, for example, does fairly well there. The fuel sector, NUMSA, has done fairly well there, historically. But you've got huge chunks, and again, with the rise of labor broking, the rise of casualization workforce, those sectors tend to be the least organized. I would be surprised if more than a quarter is organized there, but it could even be less than that, Chair. I think also, Chair, that's why we were also so pleased with this bill that it's specifically going to target those most vulnerable workers. So, Chair, I think, yeah, but I will gladly share with you that detailed research around the different sectors, Chair.
Thank you very much. I think let me now take this opportunity to thank COSATU, was representing Parks was representing COSATU, FEDUSA and NAPTU for the presentation, and they also promise you that the input that you've made will be considered by members when we do deliberations. Perhaps just before I close on this part, just to check with the Parliamentary Legal Services, if they would like to say anything at this stage.
Thank you, Chair. Not on my bill. My bill was the Labour Laws Amendment Bill. I'm glad to hear COSATU is in support of the bill. So no comments from my side.
Thank you, Chair. We welcome the comments from Mr. Park, as he's mentioned many of the issues that they raised during the deliberations in the PC were taken into consideration, and we made a number of amendments. We will make further consideration on those outstanding issues that we've raised together with the department, but I think many of them can be dealt with in regulation, so it's not, strictly speaking, not necessary now unless the committee feels otherwise.
Thank you very much. What I also wanted to indicate is that the fourth bill, honourable members, is the private members bill that talks about the leave, parental leave, adoption leave, commissioning, parental leave. We depending on the submissions and also the interaction with those submissions. We might at some stage separate it from these other three bills. Because in any case, we are supposed to have dealt with it separate from the three bills. But at the time, we thought we were saving time because we were to pass the bill before the 1st of May.
We received the briefing on the 20th of February, and we thought that we're going to process all four bills, at once before the 1st of May. But it transpired that we could not process the other three bills before the 1st of May. And therefore, at some stage, won't delay this particular one because there will be delays. But I'm saying this is subject to the submissions that we receive with regard to that particular bill. With the nine submissions so far we have received, there's very little that talks to those the private members' bill, meaning that at some stage we'll have to deliberate and have a report and adopt a report on that specific one while we continue with the other three bills. Yeah. So I just wanted to indicate that. We're done with regard to the public hearings for today because when we approached those who made the written submission to come and present, unfortunately it was only COSATU that is available today. But I think tomorrow there will be three tomorrow. And we'll be starting at 1400 hours tomorrow to deal with those three presentations. Okay.
Chair, can we just get clarification? Is it possible for us to finalize tomorrow? Must we still have public hearings next week? Because from the report that you've just given us, we do not have the need, as informed by those that are supposed to, that we have invited to make oral representations to us. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. There are others that have already indicated that they will be available on the 26th. On Tuesday next week. Yeah. So because of that, we won't be able to finalize tomorrow. At this stage, we go to deal first before we deal with the minutes of the previous meeting. The issue that I raised earlier of the National Land Transport Bill. Department is free to leave, but we'll ask a parliamentary legal service just to remain because we also be talking about the bill. Public is welcome to stay on PMG, but because that to Department of Labour, you are free to leave if you want to do so. But we'll meet with the stakeholders that will be making presentation tomorrow afternoon, as well as the Department of Labour. Thank you very much. Honourable members, as I was indicating with regard to this National Land Transport Bill, is that a week before last, there was a presentation to members that was in the on the bill. The next stage now, as I was indicating, is that we're going to be advertising for public hearings, one. Two, we also will be going to our provinces to brief the portfolio committees in the legislatures. And then when we come back, we will deal with the public hearings whilst the processes in the provinces are taking place on their own adverts and also public hearings. And then we deal with the negotiating mandate and so forth and so forth. So what I wanted to suggest is that now instead of waiting for, because we're only coming back on the 30th of July, and our
first meeting as a select committee will be on the 31st. In fact, we're coming back on the 31st, let me put it that way, because Tuesday will be the 31st. So we'll be having a first meeting on the 31st of July. Now, I know that provinces are also going to go for a constituency period, but theirs is shorter than ours. I know in the Eastern Cape they are reopening on the 17th of July, because their constituency period is linked to the school closure, school holidays. Now, in my mind, I was thinking that we could make arrangement, therefore, with the legislature in the Eastern Cape, that we have the briefing between the date of the 17th and the date of the 30th of July, so that we know we're done with the briefings. It would require, as I was indicating, at maximum 1 day out of this constituency period. Even less, that 1 day will just be a maximum. Those briefings normally would take about maybe 2 hours. And then we know that as part of the process of passing the legislation, we're done with the briefings, so that we can then embark on other processes. So I wanted to propose or suggest to members that if we could do that during the course of the of the constituency period, make arrangement with the legislators, the committees in the legislatures, but specifically the Portfolio Committee on Transport, link up with the committee secretary and our PLOs, and then the committee secretary will link up with the department, so that when you go and visit the provinces, the department will also be there for the presentation. So I just wanted to make that suggestion, so that we done with the briefings, and then we can then embark on other processes as well. Can I have your views on that part, that point? Other than that, it will mean, therefore, we can only have the briefings in August when we come back, and then we continue with the processes. For me, I just wanted us to do and deal with the issues of briefing as quickly as possible, so that the other processes can start immediately. Processes so that provinces can also immediately start advertising and not wait for us to come and make do the briefings. They can start with the public hearings and so forth and so on. But now, if we don't brief now, it means they must still wait. They must wait for us to come and do the briefing on the legislation. Honorable Mago.
Chair, two things. The one is, there's also the ARTO bill that I know we have dealt with in Gauteng already. I've done the briefing. The public hearings has happened. We're not saying anything about that. However, Chair, my second point would be that when we had our committee meeting last week, we had two provinces here, Free State and Gauteng. And if I have it correct in terms of the minutes as well, is it was the chairperson of the portfolio committees in those two provinces. Now, I would appeal to you, Chair, that you also check with the provincial liaison officers how far they are on that, because it could be that they are already ahead of us, which will give us more time than, or rather, which will improve the chances of us dealing with each year sooner. If you could just, if I could appeal to you to through our secretary check that with the parliament provincial liaison officers. Thank you, Chair.
In terms of our program with regard to ARTO, we propose that on this program, I hope that members have questions, we suggest that we deal with the negotiating mandates on the 31st. When we come back, the very first meeting of the select committee, when we come back, we will be dealing with the negotiating mandate on ARTO. We assume that now all provinces have been briefed, that all provinces have had their public hearings, and that all provinces now have a negotiating mandate. I think even, let me stop there. And then, therefore, on the 31st of July, the very first meeting after we come back from the recess or constituent period, we'll be dealing with the negotiating mandates on ARTO. And then the following week, we continue with the labor laws, amendment bills, whilst then the processes in the provinces are continuing on the national land transport bill, assuming that we agree that we will brief them sometime in July, before the 31st of July. Assuming that here we will agree on that. So, Chair, in summary, in the third term, all that we'll be dealing with are the bills. We will deal with the ARTO, we will deal with the labor laws, we will deal with the National Land Transport Act. So we won't be getting any briefings, whether on annual report or APP or anything. All that we'll be dealing with in the third term will be the bills. So far, the four bills on labor laws, the two bills of Department of Transport, that's all that we'll be dealing with in the. But also then there will be NCOP programs like taking Parliament to the people, and also the oversight visit to Limpopo. So those mainly will be the programs that we'll be dealing with. I know you don't want us to go to Limpopo, but I repeat that the next oversight will be Limpopo. I was clarifying and also making a request that we support the process before we go to the minutes. We're going to, or maybe what we could do then, let's look at the program itself and see whether we adopt the program, because I'm not sure if the program also has this point that I'm raising of it doesn't, or then perhaps if then we look at the program, we adopt it. But also in the adoption of the program, we add this point that I'm raising, that we have the briefings, perhaps to be precise, we would say to have the briefing between the let's say July and August. Those who are able to have briefings in July will be able, maybe we'll say a period of July, August. We say the briefing on National Transport Land Bill. Can we agree on that? Because I don't want to say only July, yet others won't be able to do it in July. Can we say July, August?
Yes. Agree?
Absolutely.
No, Chair.
Okay.
Can I just, before we agree on that, just clarify one element? I see in terms of the program,
yeah,
we are looking at considering negotiation mandates, and then a separate day we are considering the final mandates. What inhibits us from doing both on the same day?
Mm-hmm. Okay. You responded to that.
Thanks, Chairperson. If I can just come in on that. On the negotiation mandates, you must understand there are obviously 9 provinces. So each province on each part of a bill might not be 100% in line with each other. So that will take a long time. If we really want to take time and do our work correctly, there is no way that we will be able to do that in one day. It might even take that we're going to have to set the extra Friday to work through that. Because as you know, we are on a negotiating mandate per province. We have to listen to each specific part of those amendments. We have to see if 5 or 6 provinces say the same. If not, we have to start negotiate on this. This is our job as legislators here in the NCOP. So, Honourable Eddie, from my side, I just can't see how we can get through that on one day. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, I'm tempted to agree with your proposal, but can we just, for noting, say probably delegates must then negotiate with their provinces, because I know from the Northwest Province, the recess only ends on the 13th of August. So it's not the same to other provinces, and therefore there might be limitations in terms of the ability to do a briefing. It started already, and it's only ending on the 13th of August. So if we agree, Chair, then let's leave it, and probably engagements between permanent delegates and your office for intervention can then assist. On the second issue, it's tempting to agree with Bra Eddie, but Bra Eddie, even last week in the other committees, there was this thing about the adherence to the Mandate Procedure Act. So can we agree that we separate negotiating mandate from the final mandate? Thank you, Chair.
For last week when I was saying that there were 2 provinces that didn't have a final mandate, Northwest and Northern Cape, because of that challenge. But it means also we must regularly interact with our provinces on this and even put pressure that they must make sure that we have mandates, negotiating and final mandates on these matters, so that we don't get them harassed in the house. Okay, we're done then with the process. Legal unit, I don't know if you want to say anything on this. Can we then adopt the program? But also, as you know, it's subject to changes from time to time because of the NCOP program. Okay. Thanks very much. That then takes us to the confirmation of the minutes. Only 1 cent. It's just a Tuesday, June 2018. It doesn't have a date here. Which date are these minutes? Eh? It's just a Tuesday, June 2018.
12.
Eh? 12. Oh, okay. Because I was not here, so I don't know. Perhaps let's start with that as a correction, that we must have a date. Page 1. Are there any corrections or omissions? There's no date here. It just says June 2018. Yeah, that's the first correction. This one that deals with the
the agenda of the meeting was the presentation by Central Energy Fund on turnaround plan aimed to clear governance issues that are affecting the performance of PetroSA and Strategic Fuel Fund. So those are the minutes. Page 2, I'll check if your names have been properly spelled.
Page 2, just in the interest of progress with jury spell, these minutes were circulated to us Tuesday already, yesterday was already. I've read them, I took time, they are perfect. I want to move for the adoption of these minutes.
Can we have... Honorable Vusima Kwebu is moving for the adoption of the minutes, seconded by Madikhal. So minutes have been adopted. It was a decision of the last minute meeting. I think it anticipated that the stakeholders that were going to make presentation would be more than one. It was anticipated, but then between the meeting and now, when the committee secretary was interacting with the stakeholders, only COSATU was available today. So others are only available. For example, tomorrow we're having 3. So I'm saying that I'm just going back to the decision. That the decision was informed by anticipation that they would have public hearings and would have more than one stakeholder today. Honorable Tekhale and then Honorable Makuru.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Can I request that next time, if ever maybe things change, we also change time? Because our coming here, our agreement for agreeing on 9 o'clock, it was because we are going to have more than one presentation.
And thanks, Madikhal. Point taken. Honorable Magoon.
Chair, I know it was appreciation on page 4 of the minutes that that proposal to start 9 o'clock was made by the Honorable Madikhal. It was called by the Honorable Matebula.
No, I think we agree, but I think the point that she's making is that if then we find out that they will have enough time to deal with the presentation, we should then change the time accordingly and inform members.
Chairperson, can I request my other chairperson to listen, because listening is
okay. Thank you very much, Honourable Member.